mixfm.co.za.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Styles every Tuesday night at 7:15.
We're back. It's 7:15. It's Chris and Suzanne Styles on The Success Show, and we are going to just run and jump straight into it tonight. You know that at the end of August, it's NAC 2014 at Gallagher Estate, Midrand, just around the corner. We have some tickets to give away. If you'd like to email us, success@mixfm.co.za. Let us know why you should be attending this multi-speaker event. We've got wonderful speakers like Les Brown, and In Pursuit of Happiness is Chris Gardner. Now, tonight on the show, we have an amazing, amazing coup. We are delighted to have in studio with us Dr. John DeMartini, and we're going to be talking about breaking through relationship conflict. Now, you know, for Chris and I, it's a matter very close to our heart as Marriage Week ambassadors for Marriage Week coming up in South Africa very soon. So if you have any questions, you can tweet us on at Mix938FM, or you can send us an SMS on 41348. SMSs are charged at R1.50.
Absolutely. How delightful it is to have Dr. John DeMartini live in studio with us. And as Suzanne mentioned, at the end of August 30th and the 31st at Gallagher Estate, a fantastic event, National Achievers Congress, Chris Gardner, Tom Hopkins, brilliant lineup of speakers. Now, Dr. DeMartini, wonderful to have you in studio. It was about 15, 16 months ago that we had you here for the very first time, and how delighted we are to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you here, and also to speak around a topic that's so close to our hearts, being relationships. But what I love is I just missed you when you were here in July, and I popped in a little message to your office in Johannesburg, and it's so nice to know that you come back so often and that you don't just do your big 3 or 4 day events, that you come and you actually chat to us and share with us other bits of your knowledge around relationships. I know you've got a financial freedom event coming up in about a week's time, so thank you for
thank
sharing.
Thank you. I'm the one blessed here.
Before we kick off and really dig into the relationships and what makes it tick and how to be happy, your few days here in South Africa, what have you got lined up? Because by the end of the show, I know people are going to be leaping out of their chairs. They're going to be wanting to head to your events. So let's kick off the show firstly by getting that piece of admin over and saying, what is lined up, what dates, and where?
You know, that's a good question myself. I'm not sure if I know all of them.
Okay.
I know that I'm here doing a series of media events. I'm also doing a program on relationships.
Brilliant.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
On conflict, breaking through conflict in relationships tomorrow, I believe at the Santon Convention Center.
Right.
At 7 to 9.
Yep.
And then I'll be doing a program on financial freedom to help people break through what's stopping them from having more finances in their life and be able to structure their life in a way where there's more money at the end of the month than month at the end of the money.
Wow.
And how to save and invest money so they can actually have it working for them instead of having them have to work for them.
And website-wise, curious people, where do they go?
I believe they can go to CompuTicket, and also that's the primary source is a CompuTicket. If they look on there and find my name on CompuTicket, they can find out all the things I'm doing. I'm also doing the Breakthrough Experience this weekend.
Brilliant.
Which is one of my favorite things. But we're doing a whole bunch of programs, from training programs to education to young adults. Inspired Destiny program. I think I've got about 20 different talks coming up in the next 2 weeks.
Wow. I do love it. You're busy, huh?
Yes. It's been my dream to travel the world and to teach, and I've been blessed to do it.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. I'm sending out on Twitter all the links for both the events page on the drdemartini.com website, as well as the CompuTicket page. If you just search there, Dr. DeMartini, all the events come up under CompuTicket, and you can book there. And what I really love is that the talks that you are doing are only 180 Rand. So that's an amount that anybody can afford. So really, go ahead, pop into CompuTicket.com on the web. You can see all Dr. DeMartini's events. And we've got him for about 2 weeks, which is absolutely fantastic.
Now, John, first question, Jack meets Jill. Yeah, And it's just, oh my goodness gracious me. He's just the greatest guy. She's just the greatest girl. And it sparks and it's moonshine and roses. And then about 3 months later, suddenly Jack looks at Jill and thinks, heck, where did you come from? And Jill looks at Jack and thinks, you're not nearly what I thought you were. Now, I'm really, really curious. And this is something, as Suzanne mentioned, relationships are very close to our heart. What on earth is going on? Because when they met, it was just fireworks. And now suddenly someone's poured iced water on this and hell, the ice is melting. And this is just not good.
Well, every human being lives by a set of priorities, mm-hmm. a set of values, things that are most important to least important in their life. And every decision they make is based on what they think will give them the greatest advantage over disadvantage and greatest reward over risk to those values, those highest values. Whenever they meet somebody and they perceive initially that there's going to be more advantages and disadvantages, more rewards and risks, more similarities and differences. Because when you first meet somebody, you go, oh my God, we have the same number of eyes, same number of teeth, same number of ribs. We must be soulmates. But when we see more similarities and differences, more positives and negatives, more that, we create dopamine, oxytocin, vasopressin, endorphins, enkephalons, and serotonin in the brain, which are the chemistries of addiction, bonding, fantasy, and in some cases, delusion. And we create a fantasy, oh my God, this is the person I'd like to settle down and get married to and have kids with and this kind of thing.
Exactly.
And what happens, those chemistries are literally signs of imbalanced perceptions. When we are in that way, we go into an infatuation and we become blind to the downsides that are there the whole time. Mm-hmm. But we're creating such a fantasy that we're overlooking what's obviously there. And they're doing the same in probability. If it's a mutual attraction. And anytime we're infatuated and we're blind to the downsides, over time, we start to discover them. So what happens, there's a thing called hedonic adaptation. And hedonic adaptation is that the moment you meet somebody, the first moment is the most experienced, most thrilling. But the next time you go, it's a little less. Like the first kiss, you'll do it for hours.
Absolutely.
That second kiss, an hour and a half. The third kiss, 1 hour. Fourth kiss, 45 minutes. And after a while, you go, do I have to kiss?
And I love it.
So what happens is the dopamine starts to go down because of hedonic adaptation. It's just like an addict. You have to have twice as much of the compound to get the same effect. So you have to have twice as much stimulus to get the same effect. So what happens is you start to have hedonic adaptation, calm down your emotions, so you start to see both sides. Because when you're infatuated with somebody and you're blind to the downsides, because you think they have something to offer you that you want to consume, and literally you want to consume them, then what happens is you start to sacrifice your real, true, highest values to be with them.
Wow.
And when you do, you try to be somebody you're not to be with them. And you start to sacrifice what you really are about. And your highest value is your identity. That's what you're dedicated to. And when you start sacrificing your highest value, you start thinking, you know, I'm now doing this for you. You owe me one. And you start accumulating a resentment, which then starts to undermine the infatuation until they come back into balance. And at that moment, once they're in balance, you start thinking, well, I want to have my life too. We need to find a way where I'm getting what I want if I'm going to give you what you want. And you start to get a little bit more reasonable. And in the process of doing it, the dopamine's gone, the oxytocin's gone, all these bonding compounds, and you start to say, I want my life back. Now, this is what happens when you start out with infatuation. It eventually leads to putting people on pedestals and then putting them in the pits. Because the fantasy you make is not who they are. The fantasy is what you concocted in your brain. And so what happens, they don't live up to the fantasy, so now you resent them. Now you get substances like norepinephrine, epinephrine, cortisol, dehydrotestosterone for fighting. You start getting substance P for pain. You get into the fight or flight resistance mechanism. And now you start to see more drawbacks and benefits, more losses and gains, more disadvantages and advantages, more differences, similarities. You go, we don't have anything in common. We have our eyes are two different directions. You know, we start thinking the other way. And if you can endure that down, it'll usually come back and it'll vacillate back and forth. And after about 60 years, it starts to come to center. I'm joking. That's supposed to be a joke. But
I love it.
It takes. I met a person who was 85 years old, a woman, who is a lovely lady. She came in as a patient one time, and she said, you know, it takes about 60 years to have a good relationship. I said, why is that, ma'am? She says, well, most people start the relationship in their 20s. In the first 10 years, you want out. The second 10 years, he wants out. The third 10 years, you both want out. The fourth 10 years, you sneak out. The fifth 10 years, you said, ah, what the heck, the kids and all. But the sixth 10 years, it starts to get good. And I said, why do you say such a thing like that? And she says, by then you're in your 80s. You can't see him, smell him, taste him, hear him, or feel him. So you're back in the fantasy.
Beautiful.
Oh, that is wonderful. And that is, it's such an important thing around, I think so many people are influenced by the media and what relationships are supposed to be like. And then we have the celebrity X factor of how unreal reality television is. And we have this completely skewed vision on what our relationship is supposed to be about, who we're supposed to be in a relationship with. And there's just two examples from both from your books. One was an example that we read about in How to Make a Hell of a Profit and Still Go to Heaven, which was around a lady who'd chosen a completely wrong partner for her and rushed into a relationship and nearly got married, or did get married and then very quickly got divorced. And then as well in the values factor was the actual relationship where a physical encounter became so skewed in the fantasy world that somebody could not have a relationship with their spouse. And how you deconstruct that and get somebody to realize that, you know, everything's such instant gratification, so if it doesn't work, let's get out. So how do we start looking at the realities of who we are as well as who our partners are?
That's a great question. As I said a moment ago, that every human being lives by a set of priorities and values. And whatever's highest on their value is what they're dedicated to. And whatever's highest on their value, they're spontaneously inspired in the morning to get up and do. So that's what their life revolves around. And their identity, their ontological identity, revolves around that highest value. So people want to be loved and appreciated for what is truly most important to them.
Okay.
So that means that that's who they are. Like, I'm a teacher. I love researching and writing and traveling and teaching. So my identity is wrapped around that. And somebody else may be totally dedicated to spiritual quest, or maybe their career, or maybe their family. But whatever's highest on their value, that's what they are revolved around. They want to be loved and appreciated for that. And if the person they're with cannot learn the art of communicating what is important to them in terms of what's important to the person they're in relationship with, then there's going to be alternating monologues, not a dialogue. One of the greatest questions I've found in relationship dynamics that a person can ever ask is first identify what their life demonstrates is truly most important to them, because that's what they do every day. Hmm. That's what they're dedicated to. You never have to remind them to do the thing that's truly most important to them. No one ever has to remind me to do it and research and teach. Whatever that is, know what that is, because without that, you're not in relationship with a real person. You're in relationship to who you think they are and what you want them to be.
Wow.
And the second you identify what they're really dedicated to, now you want to ask how specifically is what they're dedicated to, what's highest on their value, what they're most inspired by, what they spontaneously can't wait to do. How is that helping me do the same? How has it helped me fulfill what I'm dedicated to, what's most important to me? And in reverse, how is what I'm dedicated to helping them do what they're dedicated to? If you can't see what they're dedicated to is serving you, you're going to want to change them and fix them. And if they can't see what you're doing is dedicated as helping them, they're going to want to change you and fix you. And if any two people are wanting to change and fix each other, the relationship's on the blink. They want to be loved and appreciated for who they are, not who you want them to be. Hmm. So you have to learn to find out how what they're dedicated to is serving you, so you don't need to fix them. So you can appreciate them for who they are. Because when you love people who they are, they turn into who you love.
That's amazing. And I love your emphasis in there, and that you don't have to fix them.
There's nothing to fix.
And that's, I think, what happens, and particularly with women. They always say that a man marries a woman hoping that she'll never change, and a woman marries a man, you know, knowing that she's going to fix him. And it's letting go of that paradigm around the fact that, you know, you've got to fix his bad boy ways or whatever it was that was wrong with him. Because why would you actually want to marry something that's broken? Or be with somebody. So I love the fact that you emphasize on that. And you really look for the person that they are, not the person you're thinking that you should be marrying or going out with.
Well, anytime you try to set a goal or an intention that is not congruent and aligned with what's highest on your value, you have an internal dialogue of beating yourself up. You have what I call the internal anger and aggression, the A's, the internal blame and betrayal, feelings of betrayal, the B's, the internal criticism and challenge, the C's, and the internal despair, despondency, and depression, the D's. The ABCDs of negativity are a byproduct of setting goals that don't match your values. Now, the ABCDs of negativity towards others is anytime you set a goal for them to live outside their values and expect them to live in your values, you've got the ABCDs of negativity towards them. You're going to be angry and aggressive towards them. You're going to blame and feel betrayed by them. But see, they never betray you. You betray you by projecting an unrealistic expectation on them to live outside their values and inside your values. Betrayal is not what they do to you. Betrayal is what you do to you.
That's incredible.
Well, it's just absolutely brilliant. There's nothing to fix. What an earth-shattering statement that is. And it's quite amazing. I'm watching the social media, and the social media is flying tonight. We've got tweets coming in, especially around the dopamine. So you've certainly got the audience on the edge of their seats tonight. As you were teaching earlier, and I use the word teaching because that's what you do, and such deep love and respect for your work. In the midst of one of your sentences, you said you're literally consuming the other person. What did you mean? What exactly was that? Because my ears pricked up. I thought, okay, I want to dig into that.
Okay, that's a good question. I was flying from Los Angeles to Melbourne, Australia a couple of years ago. And I was flying and sitting next to a guy named Derek Denton, who is a gentleman who is a leading researcher and wrote a book called The Dawn of Consciousness and Primordial Emotions. And he showed that species before the human and in the human have primordial needs, which is oxygen and water and food and reproduction, and then eventually clothing and shelter, etc.
Yeah.
And these primitive emotions, when these are our basic, most primitive values. And whenever we feel that something is going to fulfill those values, we feel we open up to it and we want to consume it. Anything that challenges it, we want to close down to it and retard it. So we have a thing that we call prey and predator. Prey is the thing that we want to eat, and predator is what we want to avoid. It wants to eat us.
Got you.
So what happens, we still have those primitive emotions inside us, those primitive biochemistries. Those same chemistries I just mentioned of infatuation is the same chemistries that go on in an animal in prey.
Yeah.
That you want to eat.
Yeah.
And the same thing that you have that's a predator, the same chemistries occur when something's going to eat you. One is a parasympathetic initiator, one's a sympathetic initiator. Now, when you actually see somebody that you think matches your search image, which is a combination of everything that has ever supported your values from the time you're born till that moment, anything that matches that search image, you initiate the same chemical compounds as what it takes to want to eat.
Yep.
So you want to consume them. You want to become part of them. You want to literally eat them. And I mean that not unliterally. So we give that a mathematical number called 69, but it's but it is basically you want to consume them. So you want to lick on them, you want to chew on them, you want to nibble on them, you want to literally start eating them. You're going to consume them because you're too humble. When you're infatuated, you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you. And you want them inside you. So you tend to inject them into your life and inject them into their values into your life. That's why you start sacrificing for them when you're first infatuated. But eventually, you get satiated. And just like anything else you eat, you reach a point where you've had enough and you want to take a break from eating. When the predator comes along, you have put up a defense mechanism. And you want to, resist that person. You have instead of being gullible and open to them, put them on pedestals, you now want to avoid them and protect yourself from them and put them in the pit. And now you don't want to eat them. In fact, they're eating on you, but you don't want to eat on them. And you literally are protecting yourself. And so your digestive system shuts down. Your defenses go up, not only on the outer part of the body, but inside the cells. The nucleus, it's interesting, inside every cell, when you are infatuated with something, the nucleus is activated for reproduction. It's causing mitosis to want to grow and anabolically grow and grow and eat.
Yeah.
But when you're under stress and something's challenging your values, you're resenting somebody, it shuts down mitosis and creates apoptosis and destruction of the cells. So we're literally building and destroying ourselves when we're infatuated and resentful inside us. And a healthy relationship, it's been shown that maximum growth and development in biology, in all biology, is a balance of prey and predator, a balance of support and challenge, a balance of that. And true love is the synthesis, the balance of support and challenge, prey and predator.
One of my, in fact, my highest value is to learn. And I am just blown away. That was mind-blowingly good, because it suddenly makes so much sense to me. And as you were teaching this, I was going back many, many, many years to zoology and the classes and the physiology, and it all makes perfect sense.
Well, when you're truly infatuated with somebody, you literally, I remember when I was, I think I was 12, we used to have a roller rink that we used to go. And the girls and the guys would meet up at the roller rink. And they used to have a kissing contest outside the roller rink. And whoever could kiss the longest, and this was French kissing. This is tongue kissing.
Yeah.
And whoever could kiss the longest got a free pass into the roller rink. So we would have all these kids. At the time, you didn't feel you were a kid, but looking back at it, it's like teenagers outside kissing for an hour, trying to beat the contest and try to get into the roller rink so you could meet and, you know, kind of dance on the roller rink kind of thing. And it was a consuming. It's sort of the French kissing was a form of consuming, you know.
Absolutely.
And then they would used to nibble on necks. I don't know if they did that in South Africa, but we nibbled on.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And hickeys, they used to call them.
Yeah.
But these are all part of the biting reflexes, the nibbling reflexes, and chewing reflexes, and licking reflexes, and all these are very primitive responses. And when we're highly infatuated, we're little animals. We act like little juvenile animals.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Right. Now, when you were teaching earlier...
By the way, when something challenges values, the biting reflex.
I'm sure.
I was just thinking that could be part of it.
It's not nibbling, it's biting. Full masseter muscles contract.
Let's take the world that we live in now, which is the digital age. iPads, tablets, etc., etc., etc. And I notice, even when you go to a coffee shop, how rare it is that you actually see people sitting and having a conversation, actually really eyeballing each other and just being human, if you will. It's all these devices, everything, the way we communicate, the way we talk, the way we interact. Now, so much of a relationship, I think, right now is happening through these devices, especially with your younger children, SMSs, WhatsApps, etc., 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 and also adults. And as a result of this, there's a lot of sexting which is going on. So it's almost as if this is driving an enhanced level of infatuation. Now, I'm really curious because straight out, I know a whole bunch of people who have absolutely done that and are still doing it, whether they're married, whether they're not, it's the dopamine. I see you nodding in agreement. What is actually happening as a result of social media and all this evolution into this digital age to just the good old human touch?
Well, I guess you got safe sex with Skype.
Well, that's for sure. Yes, yeah, it's a lot safer.
I haven't found too many pregnancies come in that way. But there's pros and cons to everything. And with digital age, you can get the tonics and the toxics. The tonics are the advantages of being able to communicate with somebody anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
And the toxics is you become consumed by the social media, where it can consume you and distract you from other priorities in life. So I'm not going to say it's good or bad. I'm just going to say how you use it can be of primary value or a distraction. If you're sitting there and having a dinner with somebody and they're both preoccupied with something else, as long as they're both agreeing that that's what they're wanting to do and that's what's highest on their values and they're just sharing their time doing that, I guess that's fine. But if they're having an intimate date and they're both on their cell phones talking to somebody else, the dialogue's not very strong towards each other.
Exactly.
So I think it's a time for carrying your cell phone and time to put it away and put it to rest. But, you know, I just did a digital detox presentation in New Zealand just a few days ago and did some radio media around that and talking about how to prioritize. You have to stop because there's a law that states, Parkinson's law, that if you don't fill your day with high-priority things that inspire you, that raise your self-worth, it will automatically, entropically fill up with things that disinspire you, that lower your self-worth. Hmm. And if you don't stop and reflect and really look carefully at what is really most important to what you would love to do in life, it's very easy to get infiltrated by everybody else's expectations and values. See, nobody's getting up in the morning and dedicating their life to you.
No.
You're it.
Yep.
If it's up to me, you know, if it's going to be, it's up to me kind of thing. So you have to decide what is really truly priority to you, and you have to be able to screen out things and not let other people or other situations stop you from doing what's truly most important to you. Now, if you're in a relationship, they're doing the same. If they both are prioritizing your action, wherever that relationship fits on their priorities will have its place. If it's number one, they will designate time for that and have time for they can be together. And they will cut out the distractions from the outside. If they're both number two on the relationship, or three or four, then other things will keep coming up. They'll use the media to do it, and they'll be obviously lower value on the relationship. If there's not enough value in a relationship, it kind of breaks up. If there's too much, there's a boundary zone between boredom, which is too little, and burnout, too much.
Right.
I tell people, I have sometimes women come in and they have some fantasies. They say, I want my man to make me number one. And I said, let me explain to you. You don't want that. If you're number one, that means they're going to be calling you every hour on the hour. They're going to want to have sex with you every other hour. They're going to be consumed by you. They're going to be jealous. They're going to be focused on you. And they're not going to be focused on business, economics, or socializing. So which means that they're going to be basically sacrificing off you and not producing an income. You don't want to be number one. My suggestion is around number three or four. After they have a career and after they have some income, so there's some resources there, and a social life, so they're not totally dependent on you, now you can have a relationship. But when you do, you have to juggle out what priority is. So my advice is to stop and reflect and look at where you are in your priorities and where they are in your priorities and be upfront and don't try to distort that, but get real about what your priorities are and structure your life where you have things on the outside not running your life. When people, I said on The Secret, when the voice and the vision on the inside is more profound and louder than all opinions on the outside, you've mastered your life. Another way of saying that is you fill your day with things that inspire you, it won't fill up with things that don't. Your mind is a garden. If you don't plant flowers in it, it's going to fill up with weeds.
Well, that's an incredible thing, and I'm sort of taking it back to the girls now, and especially when we're younger, we're very taken in by the fact that it should all be so romantic, and it should be flowers, and it should be chocolates. And actually, I found out really through our relationship that I actually prefer it when Chris does things for me. So if he washes my car, to me, that's one of the most romantic things and lovely things he can do for me. I really appreciate that because it's not something that I would do easily for myself, and I don't enjoy it. But one of the things that I find, and especially today, weddings are phenomenally expensive. Families, they just go crazy. And, you know, we see the news, so we know what the celebrities do. But I know that generally the wedding industry is massive. So they spend more time, more money, more effort in planning the event of getting married. And then you ask them, where are they going with their marriage? What are their goals? Once they've defined, if they have defined priorities, and we do really press on this with young couples and even couples that we work with in businesses and say, you know, do you know what your values are as individuals? Have you any idea of what your goals are and what you want to achieve as a couple? And they kind of just say, no, we're winging it. And I'm just stunned at the thought of taking a marriage. Chris is my second husband. I got married extremely young, found a boy, got pregnant, and got out of a very unhappy home life. 6 years later, 8 years later, found myself three children, not educated, single parent, and I had to start my life over. I'm Chris's third wife. So we've tried it a few times and got it wrong. And this time we were absolutely adamant that we were going to be looking at it from as many angles we could and learn from it. And in the learnings and coaching and studying ourselves is, what can we adapt into our life and our married life to get this balance? Because as you say, you know, I love that thought of, you know, do I want to be number one? And I've probably thought on my list that I do, but I've changed my mind now. I'll stick for number three, you know. Career and money and a bit of, you know, a bit of stability will be great.
You don't want to have to take care of him.
No.
If you have to take care of a good lover, that eventually doesn't have so much fun.
No, for sure. So should we be planning? I mean, I think it's a rhetorical question, but I'd like to hear it from you. We should be planning what we want to do with our lives, our relationships, and our marriage.
Yeah. Chocolate is a stimulant. Sugars is a stimulant. These romantic things can be, if they're moderately applied, useful. But they can also be the very source of the destroys of marriage. Because you can be addicted to the fantasies and not appreciate the realities.
Wow.
And the fantasies will never compete, really, with the realities. If you learn to love the realities of a relationship, it's far greater than all the fantasies you impose on it. Because so many people are comparing their current reality to fantasies. I define depression as a comparison of your current reality to a fantasy that you're addicted to. And as long as we have these fantasies that our men are supposed to be a certain way or our women are supposed to be a certain way, you're on your way to having a punishment. I just worked with a woman in New Zealand just the other day. And her husband's having an affair. And she was really irate. And he's going off with a younger woman. And he's not wanting to leave the marriage. He's going for a fling. And she's really irate, just upset and just screaming almost. And I said, stop. You want to ask a simple question. A human being is not dedicated to another human being as much as the fantasies like to portray that. Just like a customer is not dedicated to a company. They're not loyal to a company. They're loyal to their values. And if the company can provide for the values better than another company, they stay with them. So in the relationship, you have to realize that that's a customer.
Wow.
And that person is going to be changing their values throughout their life, have different needs met. And both people in the relationship have to know that they're with a customer their whole life. And they're going to be having unique needs and unique values, and you're going to have to be able to communicate in those values and sell in those values the rest of their life. The moment they get married, just because they get a ring doesn't mean that's going to stop. That's going to begin.
For sure.
And so to really care about somebody is to care enough about them to keep current with what their values are and keep looking for how they can fulfill those values, not sacrificing themselves, because that just creates resentment. And not to compare them to a fantasy that you've injected from some outside source, which absolutely rarely is true. I've met a lot of celebrities. And you'd be surprised how many of them that look like they have a $5 million wedding or a $2 million wedding or whatever. I know for a fact that they got products that are being endorsed. They're getting wedding rings that are handed to them because it helps promote the wedding industry. They're getting clothes given to them from galleries that are selling clothes because they want their brand out there in the marriage ceremony. And they're not actually paying what a lot of people think. It's actually just a lot of air. I know for a fact because I've worked with enough of them. So sometimes then it makes other people put under these unrealistic expectations. The wiser thing to do is to master the relationship by mastering the communication and build a brand out of your relationship. And not subordinate to other brands and sacrifice your life to the fantasies of other brands, but to build a brand and some legacy out of your own relationship. And if you're fulfilling your lives, the space and time horizons in each individual in that relationship expand. And they start seeing things that they can do together on a longer term instead of just immediate gratification. Because immediate gratification can cost relationships and long-term vision pays. But you can't impose the fantasy that you're supposed to have exactly the same goals. Because if any two people are exactly the same, one's not necessary. So they're going to have different goals with different things because you're marrying complementary opposites. You're not marrying sames. You're marrying somebody that's got similars and differences. So you have to find out the things that you have similar and honor those and different and find out where you overlap and set goals that are common and then let each of them set goals that are not. My partner has goals that are different than mine and goals that are similar. I don't want it to be all the same as mine. That would be annihilating our individuality. But I want enough to where we have something to relate to. But I also want her to have her own individuality, because that's what I respect and appreciate, the differences. Because you don't grow with it. If somebody's exactly like... there was a movie called Twilight Zone. If you remember Twilight
Zone? Yes, I do, the Twilight Zone.
And there was a Twilight Zone show one time, what Rod Serling put together, where a guy got up in the morning and he was mad at everybody. Mad at the person at the front desk at his office, mad at his secretary, mad at this person, mad at that person. He says, I wish everybody was just like me so I wouldn't get so ornery with these people. The next day, poof, everybody was him. And he had to deal with 24 hours of being with nothing but him in every aspect. Driving to work, everybody's him. The secretary, everybody's him. The people he's doing business with, everybody's calling, it's all him. At the end of the day, he said, I just want to go back and have it the way it was. When you appreciate it the way it is, it turns into what you appreciate. That's the key. So having a long-term vision is a spontaneous, emergent behavior when you're starting to learn how to communicate what you would love in terms of what they would love. The mastery of that expands the space and time horizons of the relationship.
Just to expand on that, could that be the reason why a lot of times when couples have had kids, kids grow up, they get to college, and I know they label it for the moms as empty nest syndrome, but it really is because suddenly she's lost her purpose because she devoted, and I don't think that every mom's highest value really is to devote all their time to their children. It's not about not being a good mom, it's just I don't think that's a realistic, I think that's an outside influence that a lot of women have been put under. So sort of 20, 25 years into a marriage, they actually have no idea who each other is because they've lived past each other for 25 years. And everybody wonders, why, you look so happy. Why are you getting divorced?
Well, the empty nest syndrome is very common where all of a sudden the wife, in most cases, sometimes it's the other way around, but it's most cases, where she's devoted her life to these children. And that was highest on her value. That was what she dedicated to. And her husband has to put focus on business to cover the resources. Whenever you have a high degree of reproduction, you have to have a high degree of resourcefulness.
For sure.
So otherwise you have a low standard. So if she's dedicated to that and all of a sudden they don't need her and they're independent and she's now reached the empty nest syndrome, if she doesn't come up with her own identity, her own goals, her own dreams in another area, or figures out a new form of mothering people, because that's maybe what she'll do in business, or in some other aspect of life, she can feel an emptiness because you're feeling like you've had a loss. But in truth, there is no loss. There's just transformation. I work with people, children, parents, etc., and show them whatever they think is missing is not missing. It's changing form. And mastery over adaptability and resiliency of changing form is the secret. Knowing that now that my children are gone, who's now playing the role of that? Am I starting to act like a mother to my husband? Am I starting to act like a mother to myself? Am I having internal dialogues? Am I acting like a mother to my nephews or my friends' kids or even my friends? Are they starting to be like kids to me? Look for the new form and you'll find out it's changed form. And then look for the form. You may be doing that to your husband, or your husband may all of a sudden turn into like a young person all of a sudden now that the kids are gone. Or the husband now starts taking on the role of, and like in my case, I have more interaction with my kids now in their 20s and 30 than I did when they were in their younger. And now it's the other way around. The wife is now saying, I've got some space. I want to do my own thing. And I'm the one that's going, let's see how the kids are doing. And I'm the one, I'm with more of my kids now than probably ever before.
Wow.
John, values. You really are the mastermind behind the values factor, if you will. Beautiful book that you've written on it. I sat down and went through that exercise, that very involved 13-step exercise. And when I was finished, I was absolutely blown away because my highest values are to learn, to teach, to research, to write, and to travel. I sat there and I was kind of scratching my head because you would have actually expected different results. I guess it's your programming. And the question that then popped into my mind, and this was probably 18 months ago, and I now absolutely make all my decisions around those values, and it's made my life so much easier because I now know exactly what I love doing and what I absolutely want to bullet out in order that my life doesn't be crammed up with a whole bunch of junk. So thank you so much for that. But then my my mind took a bit of a road trip into the future and said, okay, so Chris Stiles now is 45. What are the chances that my values when I'm 55 will still be the same? And so what I want to do now is reverse engineer that question to you and actually say, if you look at the John DeMartini now and you look at the John DeMartini of 10 years ago and of 20 years ago, have there been certain consistent values throughout your life? Have your values changed?
That's a great question. I jokingly say this in my Breakthrough Experience program, that between 0 and 10, you typically want to play.
Sure.
Because you're repressed by your parents and told no, 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 no. So you want to dissociate and go into dopamine and highs as much as possible and have comedy. But between 10 and 20, you want to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
And social media between 10 and 20-year-old people are pretty high. Between 20 and 30, you want to find a mate and you want to find a career.
Yeah.
Between 30 and 40, you want to stabilize a family and stabilize that career. 40 to 50, you want to have an affair. I'm joking.
Oh, there's something to look forward to.
And 50 to 60, you say, oh, what the hell? No. You want to treat your hemorrhoids. I'm joking. But every decade, there's a difference. And there is going to be what they call fixed and variable value systems. Some things will be pretty stable throughout your life, and some things will be variable. Now, in my particular life, sports and baseball were probably the most significant thing in my life from about age 4, when I got out of my braces as a child, to about 12, 13, I was into baseball.
Right.
Then my parents moved from Houston, Texas to Richmond, Texas, and baseball was not the same. If I struck somebody out as a pitcher, the next day I got knifed in the school by gangs. Because they knew the brother of the brother of the brother kind of thing. Mm. And so I went into surfing. And from 13 to about 17, 18, my whole life was surfing. I mean, enough to hitchhike to California and hitchhike to Mexico and make it my way to Hawaii to ride big waves. Then I nearly died and had a really close brush with death. And emergent out of that was something I never expected. Because I was told in first grade I would never be able to read or write or communicate, never mount a thing, never go very far in life. I was assumed to be stupid and illiterate. I had speech impediments and learning problems as a child. But I had a dream one night after meeting Paul Bragg at a talk when I was 17 that made me think that maybe I could be somebody who could read. Maybe I could be intelligent. I had a dream. I always wanted to be, but I never thought I could be. And that night, meeting that man in that 1 hour meeting with him, it inspired me to wake up something that was dormant inside me, a desire to be intelligent. Well, that put me on a trajectory now for 42 years. So that's for 42 years I've been focused on overcoming learning problems and learning how to read and teach and things of this nature. And so for 42 years, that has not changed. The content of what I might share has evolved and has gotten deeper. But the principle of wanting to desire and teach. Now, who knows what tomorrow will bring? Tomorrow I might want to be an international sex symbol or something. I've tried that a couple weeks, but it never worked. In fact, can I share a funny story?
Please.
I had the opportunity to be friends with and meet Hugh Jackman and Debbie Jackman consult for them and their family. And Hugh is a lovely man, and Debbie's a lovely woman. And they have a really lovely family. They've acquired 2 children from adoption. And they invited us to a new movie, or new theater, pardon me, show that they were doing, that he was doing with Daniel Craig, called Rain, in New York, when it came out. And at the end of their performance, they did a magnificent performance, there's about 1,000 people there. And at the end of the performance, to raise money for a charity, they decided to take their shirt off and auction their shirt to anybody who'd like to buy their shirt to raise money for an auction. Well,
I'd get my checkbook out, but I don't think I could compete.
They raised $27,000 for his shirt.
Brilliant.
$24,000 for Daniel Craig's shirt. And so I saw that and I said, man, I'm going to do that. So the next time I did my seminar, just for the hoots, I figured I'm going to take my shirt off and see what I can get for my shirt. I didn't get a penny for my shirt, but I got money to put it back on. So I gave up on the international sex symbol, so that wasn't going to work. I don't have the what it takes to go to that. But I figured I better stay with education. So I love that, and I can't wait to get up in the morning and do what I love doing. And finding out what that is, when you're able to do... See, when you're doing what you love and loving what you do, and you can't wait to get up in the morning and do it, you have more love for yourself. Mm. Your self-worth is up. When you have more love for yourself, it's a heck of a lot easier for somebody to be in relationship with you than when you're not loving yourself. Because when you're not loving yourself, we sometimes want to project that onto other people. This is important for people to prioritize their life and do what's really meaningful to them and orchestrate their life and plan their life in such a way that they do something that's meaningful. Because when they share that with each other, there's a lot more resiliency, a lot more overlap because they expand their space and time horizons, and there's more to be working with.
I'm just looking at the clock, and it's unbelievable how fast this hour has flown. We've got about, 7-8 minutes left. And I've been watching social media, and it's absolutely been a light. And one of the questions which came through, which I found very interesting, went around business. And it was actually tonight's chat with you has really focused on relationships and love relationships, if you will. And the question that came through was, should we actually understand as potential business partners what each other's values are? And I can see you nodding, so I'm actually going to hand over to you, because I gather that suddenly the lights have gone on there around the fact that if you don't do this, you're probably setting yourself up for a train smash of a business relationship with a person that you go into partnership with.
I just got interviewed this morning by... I believe it was it the Star? I think it was the Star newspaper.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do a thing in the business section on making sure that we maximize business performance.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I said is that today, way back in time, when we first started agriculture and we started having division of classes and people started doing business at the marketplace and selling their goods, the relationship dynamic was between you and the customer. And maybe the current person that you lived with at home, and some social interaction. But today in business, we have the customer, we have the employees, we have layers of employees, we have the stockholders, if we have a public company, we have shareholders, in other words, and stockholders, we have shareholders, we have stakeholders, we have ecologists, we have government regulations. We are surrounded by layers and layers of people we have to actually do business with.
Yep.
The greater we are at knowing all of the people involved in our network and knowing their individual values and carefully considering each of those variables and knowing how to communicate what we're wanting to do and articulate that in their values is one of the secrets of business. If we can't meet the needs and articulate our product, service, and ideas in the values of the customer, in their dominant buying motives, we got no customer. If we can't meet the needs and have engagement and inspired staff and employees where the job descriptions are matching their values, where they're feeling congruent and where they're looking forward to go to work, we don't have productivity. And if we can't go to work and be inspired by what we're doing because we're not doing what we love, then the whole system falls down. So the importance of knowing what your values are, knowing what what's really important to you, and organizing your life in such a way where you're fulfilling that, and organizing a way where you're hiring people to make sure that the staff members and employees are fulfilling it, and then selectively and targeting those people in business that you're doing business with and customers that can do that, and then caring enough to make sure that everybody that's involved, you're articulating what you're doing in terms of those values, makes most efficiency and effectiveness and profitability out of a company. So you can't escape value systems. It's just equity theory is the ability to communicate with equity and sustainability between relationships, and it's based on values. In fact, the study of values axiology underlies all economics and theology. What we call goods and services in economics is also good and service in theology. They're the same models. And so all of our communication is value-driven.
I absolutely love that because it's such an essential thing. My previous business, I was involved in the advertising industry, and I was a media owner. And I have a real passion for the empowerment of women. If I just look at my own background, it is one of my main values. And as a result of that, not knowing really what I was doing at the time, just learning it as I went along, was that it was my decision to only employ women, to employ either single parents or women that were the predominant, the main breadwinner within the home, because I felt that my business and what my values were best served by women that understood those values, because they were going through similar experiences and as a result had different value systems. And if it was often said in my industry that in order to get a job with me, somebody had to die in my company because nobody left. And over a 10-year period, in fact, only two people ever left the business. Only two women ever left the business and went on to do something else, because it just, our values didn't really align in the end. But it's amazing to think that that's why I was doing it myself, and that I was personally attracting and looking for the values in the woman that met mine. So actually, I've just learned something there that was really incredible.
Well, the leadership of a company is an expression of the values of the leader. And every decision they make is based on what they believe will give them the greatest advantage over disadvantage, greatest reward over risk to those values. And every dime, every penny, every nickel, every dollar or whatever, every rand that's spent in that business is an expression of their values. So tell me what their values are and I'll tell you where the business is going.
Wow. That's an incredible thing. I mean, what an amazing show we've had tonight, having Dr. John DeMartini in studio for an hour. I could just keep him. I might not let him go on to Frankfurt. We might have to have him back. But how wonderful. If you'd like to listen to Dr. DeMartini's talk on breaking through relationship conflict, go to CompuTicket.com, search for Dr. DeMartini. It'll be there. It's tomorrow evening, Santon Convention Center, 6:30 registration, 7 p.m. The talk begins, and only 180 Rand. He's also back at the convention center next week on Wednesday evening as well, talking about financial freedom. And I really suggest you get along. You need to invest in your personal growth. Your success in life will only ever be equal to how much you invest in yourself and develop yourself. And this is a gentleman that has truly walked the talk in studying and learning 42 years. Dr. DeMartini, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, my highest value is learning, and what an hour it has been. Goodness gracious, an absolute intellectual feast. I love it, I love it, I love it. Thank you. This has been brilliant. This is Chris and Suzanne Stiles on The Success Show. We'll be back same time next week.
Don't forget, if you want to win tickets to NAC South Africa 2014, you can SMS us on success@mixfm.co.za.
Success begins in the 6 inches between your ears. If you want more money, more time, more happiness, and more love in your life, then listen to The Success Show with Chris and Suzanne Stiles every Tuesday night at 7:15.